Welcome to the Space Cave. I am David Huntsberger. Hope you are doing well. A big warg to all of you. That was a term coined by Known of the Joy Sandwich podcast. Sorry, I gotta work on my breathing. I forgot to mention this. The last guest, or last week and the week before, was Jamie Leseski, and then I was just happened to be going through some things, and I forgot to mention that after my grandfather passed away, she sent me a handwritten note just saying, hope you're doing okay. I thought that was the nicest, so forgot to mention that, but she's the best, and I hope you enjoyed those episodes, and went out and got some of that beer from Jackie O's, and other goings-on in the world. Last week, and if you were in L.A., it's been about pretty close to exactly a year, somewhere within that range, since Professor Blastoff ended, which, if you happen to be unfamiliar with that, I know a lot of you who listened to that prior and then jumped over to this one, which I appreciate. But if you stumbled into this one after the fact, there's 200 or so episodes on Earwolf you can go check out. But we haven't really seen each other a whole lot since then. And then Friday of last week, Kyle headlined the Improv in LA, and then Tig and I did guest sets on the show. Or actually, I hosted, and Tig dropped in and did a set. And then the next night, Tig was at the Ace Theater, which is beautiful theater in downtown LA that I don't really think a lot of people knew existed. And then Kyle and I were both on that show as well. And we did this little sit-in thing at the end that was sort of Blastoff-esque. So a kind of reunion in the world. And if you were there, I hope you enjoyed that. It was nice to see those guys. Tig, happily the mother of twins now. Things are going great. Her book is out. Her show, One Mississippi, is coming out. Go check out all those things. I'm sure you're familiar with Tig, but if for some reason you're not, check in on all that stuff. And while we're all here together in the cave, warm and snuggly, and removed from all the things in the world that might cause you any anguish, let's go check back in on Earth and a citizen who lives there.
Hello.
Hello, is this Matt?
This is Matt.
Hey, Matt, how's it going? It's David Huntsberger.
David Huntsberger, it's going very well. How are you, Mr. Huntsberger?
Good. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've been a longtime supporter of the podcast. I looked on the, I should have recognized right when you tweeted in, but then I saw in the direct messages that I've sent you a sticker.
Yeah, I got that sticker a few months ago, and it proudly adorns my iPad now.
Awesome. Good to be out there spreading. Thanks for spreading the word everywhere your iPad goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Always have been a big fan of yours, and I was a big a Blastornaut as well. So once that I heard that you were starting up your own podcast, I definitely knew I had to tune in and of course, enjoy.
Hey, cool. Thanks, man. Thanks for making the jump. I feel like a radio DJ or something that went to a different station.
Yeah, a little bit. Absolutely.
Well, what's on your mind these days? What's got you thinking?
Oh boy. You know, of course, you know, all the politics going on and, just trying to, you know, see if people will, wake up to some better ideas than what we've got already, but I don't think it's going to happen that way.
What are your thoughts on like humanity overall? I mean, are you a historian? Do you look at how, you know, history kind of repeats itself and, do you have positive, optimistic views of a future culture and society or just planet overall that has solved itself? Or do you think things are just going to keep getting perpetually worse?
Well, I mean, I've always been kind of a pretty big optimist. You know, when it comes to like humanity overall, you know, I feel that we're moving in a pretty good direction. But, you know, there's always those kind of people who, the one person in the crowd who kind of sets it back for everybody. And I just fear that sometimes those individuals will unfortunately just, you know, take it over and kind of ruin it basically for the rest of us. But, you know, you always run into some pretty nice people, people, you know, just kind of doing kind acts, you know, just going out of their way for no odd reason, just to, you know, make someone's life easier or day better. So, you know, that's what kind of, you know, keeps you holding on to the positive thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they've started a handful of websites to, because I think people have always been doing that, of taking in wayward strangers and feeding them, giving a place to stay, or just, there's also been, you know, hitchhikers who have murdered the people that picked them up, and those stories tend to probably get, yeah, you know, a little bit more press because, for whatever reason, people, I guess, are more drawn to that. But I like that websites and just people sharing things online to say, like, hey, check this out. Here's a person who, I just saw a thing today where this guy is recycling plastic and turning them into bricks that he then goes and builds houses with. And it's like portable, the machine that makes the bricks. Yeah, it's really great. So I think things like that, when you see those shared, you go, some people are able to tune out the you know, outside noise of how bad the planet seems, depending on where you're getting your source, you know, what your source is. And they just tune that out and just go, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to try to make the world a little better. I'm going to focus on what's in front of me. But that's really hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I recently tried to get back into the loop of things, basically. I had a few months where I just felt like I was outside of the loop when it came to any kind of news. And kind of going back to what you were saying, so hard to find something like that. Maybe that's because, you know, the bad stuff gets ratings or, you know, gets more views. I don't know. It's you know, lack thereof in a lot of the, you know, the news source you go to these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's so strange that the way people align themselves politically also a lot of times lines up with their news coverage. It's same with, like, you know, people go to a church and I always felt like, even when I was a little kid, I used to ask my parents, like, why don't churches, like, once a month have a service where they just explore other ideas? And just be like, here's one we learned about. And just so you could, like, believe in the one you believed in, but also be aware of other ideologies and you know, other people's beliefs. And for news to be that way of, like, oh, I only tune in this news station, and it's the only one I can tolerate. Like, yeah, that's probably because it's coloring it in a way that aligns with you. And it is tough to just, even, you know, just print media, there's always going to, because a human is behind it, there's always going to be some skew, some little bit of push or just something that kind of guides you in a way where you're like, hey, I just want to hear the story. But that's virtually impossible because, I don't know, if you or I were to write it, we would do the same thing. We would go, well, this is terrible. And someone reading it, hey, don't tell me what's terrible. I'll decide what's terrible.
Exactly. Well, it's like, and some of that's, I think, you don't even know you're doing it. You know, yeah, you want to try to say, if I was writing some kind of news article and you're putting it out there, and, well, I want to try to be as unbiased as possible. But, you know, of course, at one point, my, you know, personal beliefs or experiences are going to take over in some sort of, you know, fashion to where someone's like, oh, well, this is totally biased towards, you know, this side. And it's like, I wasn't trying to do that. Like, I wanted to just give you the story, but, you know, it happens unconsciously, and I feel.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you and I read a story about someone who threw a bunch of kittens in a sack and, like, lit it on fire and threw it into a ravine, we would write it and say, this person is a monster. And there would be someone in the world who'd read that and go, hey, don't jump to conclusions about this guy, okay?
It was just a bag of kittens.
Yeah, you're just coloring it in your own way. You're putting your own spin on it. And I think that extrapolated out is how everyone feels about their news stories. They feel like everyone is being that biased with whatever they're selling them.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, bags of kittens being caught on fire isn't going to be a news story that we hear about here pretty soon.
I know.
Anytime soon.
Yeah, I watched that Making a Murderer, and that guy harmed a cat. So that was the one thing that kept me being like, well, granted, this guy probably doesn't deserve to be in prison for the majority of his adult life, but still, he's not the best. He's a pretty crappy dude.
Cat didn't do anything to him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a rough sentence for that, but still, leave cats alone. I saw this guy. I was at a stoplight once. I saw this guy crossing the street, just a hard look on his face, just angry looking, like sunglasses askew on his face, really greasy hair. He looked like he was borderline homeless all the time. A tank top that was really, you know, like stained and gross. And then these pants that were like someone who had walked out on stage holding the waistband of their pants open, like, can you believe it? I lost 200 pounds. That's how his pants fit him. They were so big. And he had them cinched down with a belt. And he was still kind of holding them up with one hand. He had all of his goods sort of in a sack in his other hand. And he was walking very angrily across the street. And I thought, that guy also thinks he's right. Like, we're all the same. That person thinks their opinions and their ideologies about whatever are just as worthwhile. And he's correct, but it's still like that we're all dealing with each other and going, what do you think? What do you think? What does this guy with the huge pants think? Are we all good here? It's pretty tough to get us all on the same page.
Yeah, but my question is, like, why do those, you know, those people with these, like, oversized pants and these crazy, you know, tank tops, why is it, like, their opinions that we always hear more about than, you know, say someone who, you know, whatever subject you're talking about, someone who is, like, really knowledgeable on the subject and maybe has even done some research, why is it always the crazy person's opinion and, you know, part of the story that we always hear about opposed to the other way? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's I feel bad after the fact that I wasn't more of an advocate for Martin O'Malley. I hope someone will send me some material that shows, like, oh, he's a terrible person. Because everything I read, he was ahead of the game on LGBT stuff, and he was very analytical and data-driven in the way that he was the mayor and the governor. And I felt like he you know, tried to get his public servants to be integrated into where they worked, like on the beat, rather than just serve the community, to actually be reviewed by them and interact with them. And when he would speak at the debates, he represented how most of my friends are, which is just like, well, when I get a moment, I'm going to jump in there and say something I think is worthwhile, but I'm not going to shout over people. I'm not going to ignore the moderator and just be yelling. And I thought he was very respectful in that way. And I thought, oh, no wonder he gets kind of cast aside, because he's not loud and he doesn't draw the most attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always kind of tried to be the kind of person, you know, I've got my own opinions on, you know, things and my own, you know, answers that I think are right. But I have always tried to be the kind of person who, you don't want to be overbearing and be like, oh, this, I think this, and this is what you should think too. Like I always, you know, if it comes to a situation where, you know, someone's asked for my opinion, mm-hmm. you know, of course I'll let them know. But, you know, other than that, I like to take that approach where it's just like, I'll sit back and I'll listen. And, you know, if I feel like I need to intervene and throw my two cents in, I'll do that. But sometimes it's a lot more safe to do that as well. You know, you don't know who you might be talking to, and you throw something out there that you believe in and they totally don't agree with it. And who knows what's going to happen, you know, after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone goes through a period at certain ages probably where you're like, all these conversations have already been had. I'm just going to let other people duke them out.
You know, in college, of course, you know, I was like, I was really opinionated and, you know, I was the opposite of what I just said, you know, I try to do. And I, you know, I tell everybody, but you just get to the point where it's like, you're not getting anywhere. Like you said, you know, these conversations have been had before. Nothing's changing, so why waste the effort on something that's, you know, that's not going to change to a, you know, to anyone else who is, you know, disagreeing with you. And it's, you see that a lot on social media these days too. You know, you get people go on there and like Facebook and, you know, post stuff, you know, why other people are wrong. It's just like the day a Facebook post changes anyone's mind, I mean, that's the day that, I don't know, that'll be amazing when that actually happens. It's you just never see that happening.
We'll have to monitor it, and let's spend all of our energy rooting for that day to come, because it'll be,
yeah, exactly,
such a monumental
deal.
Well, it's nice chatting with you, Matt. 937, where's that? Is that Louisiana?
Oh no, actually, I'm I'll just say Cleveland, because I live in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. So
okay,
I know you were recently up here in actually in Columbus.
Yeah.
So I wasn't able to make it down to your show because I get out of work a little bit late on the weeknights. But one day I'll...
Yeah, next time.
I'll be able to catch you live. It'll be great.
Cool, man. Yeah, sorry you missed that one, but good chatting with you, and let's check in again down the road.
Absolutely. I'll keep an eye on your tweets, or just give me a call. It's always a pleasure to talk with David Huntsberger. It's been something I wanted to do for a while, and so thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Matt. We'll talk to you soon. Nice chatting with Matt. I really appreciate when you guys take the time and share your telephone numbers. I know that's a vulnerable thing to do, but I think it makes the show a little bit more personable. I think we've got a nice little group here, and it's nice to chat with you from time to time. All right, let's get into the heart of it. This is a good friend of mine from Austin, really talented and creative guy, and you'll hear all about that. He draws comics. You can check out at strippycomics.com, and he's a funny comedian. Here's my chat, part one, with Ramin Nazer.
I watch, like, I'm a big Prince fan, and you see, like, Prince interviews where he's, like, just, yeah, like, the levels, like, they probably had to turn it up so high, and you know he can scream and cry and stuff, and he has that in him, but it's just, yeah, and then,
yeah. Yeah, I heard him, I saw, like, a replay of a Tavis Smiley episode, yeah, and he's just
He loved
there.
Tavis Smiley. He had such loyalty, like, to such random people, like Arsenio and Tavis Smiley, and... Oh man, it's too soon. We've had too many deaths, man. Too many, like, just count them up, like Prince, David Bowie,
Fife,
Andy Ritchie, mm-hmm, Monty Wayne, a lot of awesome people, and Lemmy, Jesus, Gary Shandling.
Yeah, it's been a weird, well, I guess Andy was Thanksgiving, but even from there, even just Thanksgiving to now, less than 6 months. That's a lot of... I think maybe it's the culture we live in where there are a lot of celebrities. I mean, the per capita celebrity percentage is way higher than it used to be. And it seems like that'll just continue to go up.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I get. I don't know. I don't know what's better. Like, if you were around when, like, you know, Hank Williams was big, it was like... There were, like, five famous people then.
Mm-hmm.
And then... I mean, I'm sure that's it's stupid. You know, yeah, you're like, even like the baseball players would go to war and things like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah, like Joe DiMaggio.
Like a joke, but it's real, I guess.
Yeah, I think like all those guys.
Even
like
the Mickey, white ones?
Yeah, Mickey yeah. Mantle went. I mean, the black players weren't allowed to play and like and become famous in the big leagues. That'd be an interesting period to know the lineage of like when all those things sort of coalesced. And then, because our view into it, and you're what, like 30?
31 now. I have to think about that because I have to think and be like, am I 32? And then I like go back and no, it's 31, I think.
And then I feel like that comes and goes. Like certain people with their age, oh yeah, how old am I? And then at certain and other ages, you're like, oh, I really know. Like that's, I'm familiar with it. Anyway, you and I are like around that same age where you're kind of, we saw like the digital age change, or saw the people being ushered in and being like MySpace stars, Twitter stars, YouTube stars, Instagram. Like we've seen all these new burgeoning kind of pockets where people become well known, where you're yeah. somewhat familiar with, like, even if you've never seen any of their stuff, you're like, oh yeah, I've heard that name. I know who that is. Like, and if something happens to them and you see like a bunch of your friends bummed out, it impacts you in a way. Like, maybe I'll look into that person now.
Yeah.
Like, their catalog, their archive still stays there. That's what's so weird. It's like, I would want someone to, like, delete my Twitter account and, like,
get rid of, that's not good.
That's just such a weird thing to, like, be a lasting, Ramin's gone, but here are, you know, 300 or 3,000 little quips or something that he put out there.
Yeah, I've got some tweets from earlier on where I reference, like, hey, if I'm dead and reading this, I don't even remember what I said, but I have some time capsule things. And to take it back to, I forget if we were talking about Prince before we started taping or afterwards, but I think everyone knows now that he's dead, and that maybe you've heard somewhere or knew from before, but he has a vault of tons of
But so did
unreleased.
J.D. Salinger, and then they never released that. Because he wrote all these novels. He was obsessed with, like, the Glass Family. I think they released...
Why didn't they release it?
I think people read them and went, this sucks. And I think he was not a pedophile, but he had a proclivity or a penchant for younger girls.
Okay.
And I would, there's just
a part. Is it bad that when I hear younger girls, it sounds different when you hear like, oh, pedophile into younger boys, because that's one we're like so used to with the, you know, Jared Fogle and the Catholic Church and all that.
Yeah.
And then younger, interesting. It's like, you don't hear about older guys and the younger girls anymore. You just hear about just being abusive towards women, but not specifically.
Yeah. To answer your question, I think it does make you a bad person.
Yeah. No, it just reveals that I already was one.
Sure.
It doesn't make me a bad one. But the vault, I don't think is, there's probably a lot of like stuff in there that's just absolute crap, but there's probably also some gems in there. But I was just trying to bring up that he said he likes time capsule stuff. And when they say like, oh, is it so that it can be released when you're gone? And he's like, I don't think about being gone. I just think about not having to communicate in real time anymore. So I like this concept of like, oh, I'm still putting stuff out. I'm just, you can't find me in the flesh anymore. But if you were an alien coming and looking at just Earth as this energy ball, I'm trying to put together a metaphor here. I apologize. But you just see like little energy like going around. There's, because that's all we are. We're just these little beings that store and release energy. We like take in food and water and stuff, and then we convert it into kinetic energy to go get stuff done. And so if aliens are watching and they're listening to everything and they're looking at all the video and stuff, they're like, oh, okay, there's this like Prince character doing this stuff, and but they're not looking at, meanwhile there might be a guy who just goes to his accounting job every day and just he has a pulse, but the aliens aren't interested in that little thing with the pulse. They're looking,
why does it have to be aliens though? Like you said that we're energy and he's communicating,
or future
in this
humans. Yeah, that could be it too. I just use
I don't think that it has to necessarily be either of the. I mean, if he is ascending or descending from a place of this energy place, I think it's common for us to look at it that way of like, oh yeah, and then maybe there's not a God, but there's something else out there, aliens monitoring. And then for other people, like, it is God. It's like, oh yeah, that's who's monitoring it. But you've written several books. I'm sure I've mentioned it in the intro to you here, but Ramin Nazer, Austin comedian, you and illustrator, animator, you have a book. Your first one was called like you're gonna die or the afterlife.
First one's called After You Die.
After You Die, and you kind of examine the most common conceptions of Earth or of the afterlife, like heaven, hell, maybe reincarnation, maybe nothingness.
Yeah, I don't even like to think of them as most of them are the common ones, but to me there was just 17 models that they could all fit under. So if it's like, you know, you come back as a lizard, you come back as a monkey, you come who cares, that's all, let's put that all in the reincarnation model. Okay, what about like feeling forever good feelings? Let's put that in the heaven model.
Yeah.
Forever bad feelings, okay, put it in the
Is Nirvana a place, or is that an attainable state when you're living?
I just put that in, they blur together, I guess the Buddhists would say, because then if it's all now, then Nirvana, it's all now, it's the same as afterlife, or same as you're already dead, you're already alive, that kind
of. And then, so what is Prince's, that he was a Jehovah's Witness?
Yeah.
Did he adhere to it? Did he stay true to it to the end? Because, I mean, dying of prescription pills is not the most Jehovah's Witness way to go out.
I don't know the guy, but from what I gather, I think he was just pulling that strongly in opposite directions. Like, I think there was, you know, the sexual side and the partying side, and then there was the extreme pure, like, don't play this movie that's R-rated in front of me, yet I have, you know, songs called Jack You Off and Tambourine and Chlorine Bacon Skin, which some of those ones are just, they're too erotic. The first time you listen to it, it's like, oh geez, I feel like I'm just listening to this guy coming nonstop. And then afterwards you just listen to the bass and drums. But he was Jehovah's Witness because of Larry Graham from Sly and the Family Stone. Larry Graham invented slap bass. He's the originator of that style.
Oh, okay. And you play bass. Is that who got you into it as well?
Actually, it wasn't Larry Graham directly. I think I got into it more because of Flea was the first guy who I knew what an electric bass was. I just kind of looked at, oh, it's just a rock band. You got the guitars and the bass player does that. Paul McCartney played the bass, and Paul McCartney did change the way bass was played. But for me personally, Flea was the first guy that stood out to me, and then from there got into Parliament Funkadelic and Jaco Pastorius and Sly and the Family Stone and crap, who else?
You don't have to name all of them.
Oh yeah,
you can.
But so Larry Graham over a 10-year period convinced Prince to be a Jehovah's Witness, which like that kind of that triggered something in me. It's like, oh geez, if those guys believe in it and those guys know something, they have this knowledge of music.
That's how everyone feels, because like Beck is a Scientologist.
Oh,
like, there
are
a lot of successful Scientologists where you're like, maybe they do know something.
For a split second, I think that. And then I think like, oh, but then Frank Zappa would, you know, he would roll his eyes so hard at that. And he also knew a great deal. So it all just, it's such a personal thing. Like, I think it's all garbage. Like, even...
like that someone would commit themselves to that guru kind of mystic. I wear scarves and no shoes. And when you come through my tent at Coachella or Burning Man, and you've been brought by a friend who has like a ring of posies in their hair, and then they go, here he is, and then and you get to pretend like you
really
matter.
Is this
really
specific, or is this an example?
This is an amalgamation of all of them in my mind. That whoever this impressionable person being led into the tent is, and maybe they're a seeker, they've taken drugs, they've tried to get out there, they've climbed to the tops of mountains, they've meditated, they've tried to transcend what it is to be a human that has to sit on a toilet every so often, release disgusting waste from your body.
Imagine if that was like shared the same way like everything else is shared, like in a society where you can't hide that. If you search someone like the celebrity going to the bathroom from this angle, imagine how much celebrity would dissolve if that just apparent everywhere. Like, my opponent, and then they're playing a video of that, like, oh yeah, well, my rebuttal, and yeah. All right, fine, we're all humans, we don't know anything, we're on this twirling rock, and we're lucky to not be hit by asteroids and to have an ozone layer, etc.
Yeah, and for someone to... just picturing all those different, like, toilet views, and how you would, like... But that guy in the tent that sits, you know, whether they're, I would imagine they're sitting cross-legged and they maybe have something like laying over their lap, and just that false, and maybe it's true, maybe it's real, to like, I can see you have an aura about you and the chakras and all those, it's cool, it's awesome, but to really like lean into that and is, to me, it's no different than being devoutly religious and having your house adorned with a bunch of like religious paraphernalia. It's the same thing. I'm burning sage and I have a very natural countenance about me. You're just, that person to me is interesting that they're like buying into it.
Yeah.
Because they could sit here and listen to me say this and go, and why do you think that? With this calm tone of like, oh, stop it. Just stop doing that. And I don't think Prince was that way, even though he was like very mellow. I think he was like a bit tortured. Like, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and that's more refreshing to me. Like, you go somewhere and you freak out. You go somewhere and go, what is all this? What in the hell is this? Yeah, I think that's way more endearing than someone's like, I got it figured out.
Yeah.
I know where we go when we die.
I don't think anyone's sound of mind is unshakable in their faith. I think they're just kind of putting most of their chips on one thing. Like, I think it's this one. Also, I hope it's this one, but yeah. I don't know if it's this one. I've been wrong so many times before, like this week. Like, who am I to say that? Especially when you look back at yourself 10 years ago, like, oh, what an idiot. Of course, 31-year-old me is also an idiot. So is 40-year-old me. So is... All of them are, they don't know, but they're trying to make themselves comfortable.
Did you think this, or do you ever think this, that like we all just go through this amusement park ride and sense the same things at the same age and have the same thoughts? 22-year-olds are going, man, do you ever think that one day you're going to be 50? And then every new 22-year-old like goes through a turnstile and goes, wow, I got to think of my life. It just suddenly occurred to me, like, whatever I do next, I want to be able to look back when I'm 50 and say, like, you did it right.
There's a subreddit on Reddit called... I'm 14 and this is deep. And that's where a lot of memes that, like, I guess people are generated by 14-year-olds, but for the most part, it's used as a reference to when, if you post something on Heavy Mind or Whoa Dude and Psychonaut and these places, and it's kind of, if they consider it thin soup, then they, like, comment, like, I'm 14 and this is deep. So it's like, oh, geez, my deep thought wasn't deep to this big group of strangers. They think it's...
Yeah, I think we're running out of new deep thoughts to a certain degree.
We're running out of all everything thoughts.
That's why VR, like you were talking about that before we started recording. I think that is the next kind of like, can we burrow in there?
Even like, look at, I don't use Snapchat, but I'm trying to learn it just because I look at, oh man, this is going to get into such a big thing, but... I try to stay on top of where the attention is, because it is like, I'm stealing this from this guy, Gary Vaynerchuk, who talks about right now, it's 1960, social media is, okay, how did he put it? So in the 60s, everyone was investing in radio, because radio was where it's at. TV mm-hmm. came out, but it's like, no, we're not going to, but this is the future. No, you're stupid kid. This is a fad. Yeah. And then TV becomes the main thing. Now TV is where the radio was at in the 60s, and Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook are NBC, ABC, and CBS. They control...
I disagree.
They don't control all the attention, but they're like where the attention is...
But it's temporary. I think that... Like, if you attack all of them, you're like, I'm familiar with Twitter. I know how Instagram works. I know how Venmo works and people exchange money. And I know how on and on and on. And like, Snapchat is the most current one. It's the most, like, the kids use it. Kids, like, you know, my sister teaches high school. If you said, like, find me on Facebook, they'd be like, what are you, an old person?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Senior, like, no, I'm not going to look on. That's where everyone's mom is. And so then there'll be something new for them and everyone will grow. But I look at it more as like, how is that affecting us? People want entertainment in their pocket. And that's frustrating as a comedian, because we're still from that era. And I'm glad, like, a lot of entertainers are, which is like, I want to make an entire record. You got to listen to the half and you got to get up and go over and flip it over, listen to the other half. But that's what I made. I didn't just make you a snippet of a song for a ringtone. I didn't just make you a single that you can play and mix for some dumb DJ. It's the whole record. The album art matters, the whole package. But now that's disappearing. There's a whole subcurrent of people that are like, I still go buy records. I still like to go to live shows. But there are fewer of them out at every live show now. And it's more about like the singles. And it is way more about like, what can I reach in my pocket and get instantly? Like, what can I get? Whether it's a meme, to me is, and that won't stay that way forever. So what's next beyond that?
I wonder if it's a pendulum and we swing back, and because the thing that's interesting about Snapchat is that the fact that it doesn't save anything. And I think about it like from our generation, or maybe like a generation a little bit before, where it's like, you don't want it saved? You know how hard we worked for this? Like, we didn't own VCRs, then we had to learn how they worked. We had to buy individual ones. Sometimes they'd get like all warped and stuff, and you only have a certain amount of space on it, and then we could finally like tape it, and you guys are throwing this away. You know, it saves it on Facebook and it has the same video capability, but you just don't want to use it because there's ads on it and because your parents are on it and there's this other thing, you know.
But maybe they understand it in a more philosophical, like a fundamental way of like, it's transient. Like, go listen to EDM because it stimulates some stupid part of your brain and just have nothing. Like, things matter to us. And maybe it's because we're so close to generations that were affected by war and the Depression that like, hold on to what you can. But really, like in a more Buddhist sense, like let go of everything.
They can be more present for some reason. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the root of why they're on there to begin with is because the parents aren't on there. And any social media, I think we've all felt it, like when Facebook was just colleges and then it was just, you know, people your age, then parents start coming on. The grandma effect is when girls start posting photos of their children, and now, like, before mom wasn't gonna come on, but now that she's grandma, I want to see pictures of the grandkids. So then grandma comes on, and then it ages up with it. And Twitter, there's no parents really on Twitter, because there's no like, what, I'm gonna write 140 character jokes? This isn't, I don't even know what that is. So there's like refuge, so you can say fuck and be like wild and still be cool. But Facebook, it's a little bit down. And then Snapchat, like, a lot of people don't know how to use it, and I think it's they're coming at it like, well, how do I use it like the other things and make it about me and get followers? And but
any meeting you go into, sorry to interrupt you
though, not at all,
any meeting that you go into, that's the only answer anyone would have for you of like, well, I just like doing stuff, and can I continue to make that a career. They go, you just got to get your social media up. Like, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
If that's all it is, like, is there any merit to anything anyone's making anymore? Or is it just playing this dumb game and figuring out social media? Because when I see friends of mine, like, going, hey, check it out, y'all. I'm on Snapchat now. I just feel like, what else are you going to go chase around? What are you going to do next? If you like it, cool. And there are people like, it is all nonsense. It's just so stupid to, oh, I'm not going to do that because I'm of a certain age, or I've gone through all of those, or we're going to be that grizzled generation. It's like, I saw MySpace and Friendster.
I actually just came up with this, I forget what they're called, whether it's metaphor or analogy. I like use them both interchangeably, and it's always the wrong one.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just telling my girlfriend this, like how I've changed the way I use them in terms of, I just see it like I'm a paper boy now, and I make my little drawings and my things, and when I wake up, it's, okay, I'm going to ride over to Mr. Facebook's house. Hello, Mr. Facebook. Give him the paper. Ride over to Mr. Twitter's house. Throw that. Ride over to Mr. Reddit's. Mr. Reddit's kind of grumpy sometimes. Doesn't like to read gets mad at what's in the news sometimes, but whatever, I'm just delivering the news.
Yeah, I'm just the messenger.
Yeah, I just see it as like, rather than spending all my time like, oh, why don't I have more on these things, like just make the thing you're gonna make, and don't be like, I don't care about social media. It's fine. I think it's smart to not care about the width of it, like how many people you have, like, because if you had a million followers in if you had a million followers, when was it, 2009, then, or let's not even go that far. If you had 1,000 followers in 2009, you said, hey, everyone, follow this person. A few hundred of the people would have engaged with that and been, like, followed. Like, we were all kind of there. Now it's all kind of split. Like, if you have a million followers, like, people, 30 faves or 50 faves. Like, there's people aren't on it as much, or maybe they're bots, or who knows what it is. But the numbers don't match up to what's actually happening. So I don't care about those numbers, but I think that anywhere people are, if you can just easily... At first, I was getting like a little down about it. It's like, oh, it's all social media now. Like, remember when it was landing sites and you would just make your site and it would have character and it would be a little hut and we'd go to the store and we'd know the person whose site it was and get it. Now it's just all Facebook. It's a big mall, or it's just three different malls and it's all homogenous.
Well, I mean, people that grew their stores, you know, for you and I, it would have to be a 24-hour day, if not more. Again, the pocket entertainment value of the biggest sites, the reason like where they try to have net neutrality, for them to be like, we want to funnel all the traffic here because we post new stuff every second. You're Ramin, you have a new drawing maybe once a day, and you might have a little blog post every other day, and maybe a photo beyond that, and you fill in the cracks. But like, if someone's standing in line somewhere and they've already looked that morning at Ramin or at strippycomics.com, they're going to go somewhere else. They're going to go to the next store. And so lately, I just think like everyone, and it's changed because, you know, everyone is creative in some way. Stand up is really not that big of a talent hike. You can just tell stories. I mean, that's not difficult to do, and anyone can enter into it as long as you can hold a microphone. So it's not like there's this thing of like, can you play the violin? Let's hear it. It's just like, oh, you can stand there and tell a story. It eliminates virtually no one. So we're all entering into a hobby, and how do you make this into a career? It's virtually impossible unless you are creating constantly and you've made your store. Because if you're just chasing around all the social sites nonstop, the chances of, even if one of those things blasted into the stratosphere and everyone passed it around and it became a t-shirt for like a campaign of some sort and everyone knew it, that still might not assure.
It's a week.
Yeah,
so it's, content is definitely king. You have to be like, what you did yesterday doesn't matter. It's all about what you're doing right now. But at first I was bummed out about how it's all a big mall. But then I thought about it, like when I was just running my regular comic PHP site, like I didn't have any engagement directly. Like if someone really liked it, I'd get an email every few days and that would be my thing. Now, like when I post something, I get like this many likes, this many, so there's more engagement, but my perception of it, because of the narcissism, is like, how come I don't have a million people
think those
like
things
all the time? I'm like, how come I don't have more? And I think we all do. It's like,
but
I would be happier if I had more.
No, I think that's one of the, to recognize, like if tomorrow Mungie came out and then people would be coming up to me like, are you a Mungie? No one splarked my gloink. I had 40 splarks
Can
yesterday.
Can we please start Mungie? What if splurking goinks just becomes the new standard? Everyone, like, Twitter changes their from a star to a heart to goinks.
Ah, 10 goinks. I'm getting off this piece of shit.
Fucking munchie.
But you, it sounds so absurd right now. And yet, by the end of this week, if all of our friends were on it, you'd be going, I didn't get any splurks today. And you just like look at it like this was placed in front of you. This you're in this cage and you're upset with the food. We're like, you can leave the cage. Just go get food elsewhere. But none of us do. We sit there and like stare in.
I think about that a lot, and like whether I have a joke about it. I'm not going to say the joke because I don't know, because I don't want to say the joke. But it's wouldn't we be like our single celled ancestors? Wouldn't they be so proud of what their descendants became? These multicellular, like, you know, not even just lizard, not even having a brain, but having like multiple layers of brain, dual thinking monkey, completely conquered the animal kingdom. We're dominating so hard, like Earth, and we're imagining, like, so there's the outward universe we could look at, and then there's the inward universe. That's we're still it's not good enough.
I like that you brought that up, because one, we're not dominating anything that's not them. So they're just, we're an extension of all of those things. If they all did come out of the sea, aside from, I guess, reptiles that were here long, long ago, any mammalian thing, I guess, essentially crawled out of the sea from one of them. I think of like those paramecium or those amoebas growing into, you know, the whatever tetrapods and et cetera moving out. And then when they did stand up, I still think back to the single cell things almost like kids in a trench coat. Like, can we do this? We're doing it. We are standing. We've crawled out of the ocean. Don't look back. Just keep walking forward.
No one will notice.
But then I think if it is kind of in that selfish gene style where, like, I like to think that those bacteria or whatever they were that got placed in the ocean were penalized, and they were from somewhere else in the multiverse. I'm like, you sons of bitches, you ruin everything you touch. You're going to throw you in the ocean. So you can't do anything from there. And they all got together and like, this might take us several billion years, but we're getting out of this ocean. And then our consciousness, all our philosophies are really just byproducts of the ultimate goal, which is them building a ship, getting back to where they came from, and really exacting revenge.
Oh, wow.
And so every personality, every human that's ever been is just like a sloughed off skin as a way along throughout. But then I don't like that. I like the idea that the prince thing that you talked about, like this energy that we are, it doesn't end. It doesn't go away. It's just in a physical form currently.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot with when I was listening to Hendrix, I Don't Live Today, and just looking at the waveform on my computer, and just you think about it like a heart. I mean, it doesn't look exactly the same, but like a heartbeat, and just like, you know, the lyric, I don't live today, maybe tomorrow, I can't say. And I'm just looking at it, I was like, oh, damn, he died in 1971. Yeah. And like, he died before I existed as an idea, and I'm listening to this thing in my ears, like his wave has carried on past these generations. And that's like a, I mean, it doesn't sound right to say it as like a goal, but it is a goal. Like, as an artist, you do want to be you want to have longevity. You don't want to make just 2.5 men and like be a forgotten thing. Like, oh, we like that for 5 seconds, but now we're more about, because people loved Dane Cook for years, and then they were all about hating Dane Cook, and now it's just kind of a, no, we don't love or hate Dane Cook. He's playing at the Laugh Factory. I remember the punk bands that you liked and when you were 13, you hate them when you're 21, and then you can like it for nostalgia. You want to transcend all of that and just be good.
But that's so tough, because the essence of being good, I would imagine, for someone like Jimi Hendrix, wasn't setting out to be like, how do I be good? It was just like, how do I play what I like and really be like, I think the seeking, the searching of taking drugs or whatever that might be, starving yourself for days, going on vision quests, whatever it is, going to sweat lodges, deprivation chambers, whatever it is to find out a way to be like, how do I play in a way that I really like, where I'm somewhat proud of it. And that's it. The other stuff comes with that, because anyone you referenced that we would think like, oh, they were shit, like they just wanted to have a career. They just wanted to have a life. They were trying to do something that they enjoyed. And very few people get those opportunities to like either be a legendary, well-respected artist and or like get a paycheck. They go, no, you just kind of take what comes to you. If you get a job writing on a show, like, good, what are we writing? And then they go, oh, it's drivel. Ah, damn.
I'd be fine with it if they were just honest like that and they said that.
But, I mean, dribble. he impacted your life and continues to, which is just crazy. That to me is like the best thing about art. It may, you might be one of those shitty pop punk bands and not know it, but you might be that to a huge group of people. But just if there are five that are like, nope, that's my guy. Mm-hmm. That Ramin, whatever he did was, and the more you create, the better chance that in 50 years, if they're not all just losing it on Snapchat and going, nothing's, nothing's really permanent. Get rid of all of it. I think we're there. That's maybe the tipping point, is we're from that period where like we can still see back to like chiseled things, stone features, marble statues.
Yeah.
And now everything's like, oh, I like the design. I like how artistic your marketing campaign was. That's so weird to me.
It's all like, I like to think of it, how much of it is ego. And I think it's all ego because I think of, so is it about the work? Like, let's say if I put out whatever it is, like albums, whatever art content, it's all content, whether you're taking it through your ears or eyes or smelling it or eating it, it's content. Mm-hmm. And so if I put out content that really changed the world and was just so good and everyone agreed it's great, but I don't put my name on it, I just kind of release it for whatever reason, this is hypothetical, and they all love it, but then the me as the character during this hypothetical situation gets remembered as Hitler, would you go for that? Would you choose to make the art that changes the world, makes everything good, but you get remembered as Hitler, or just that doesn't exist, the art doesn't exist, and you get remembered as a pretty good guy? It's like, oh geez, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I should pick the Hitler one, right? I should be remembered as the bad guy, but what about my family and the people? It's like, will they get to know? Nope, they don't get to know.
No one gets to know?
Nope, only I get to know. And even you get Men in Black erased like after this podcast, so you don't even remember it.
Because I feel like it's impossible on some degree, because there's always going to be a biographer. There's always that guy.
It doesn't work. It's so like theoretical, perfect vacuum physics scenario.
Many people thought Ramin was actually a tyrant. But in going back over the documents, people... And you're like, you're ruining it. I made that deal. No one can know that I was a decent guy.
Oh, I would love that. Then I'd get both. Huh?
Yeah.
Like,
live your life, terrible person, but then after the fact, get your name cleared. That'd be okay.
Like Tesla. Like, I mean, Tesla wasn't remembered as a bad guy, but he was remembered as not as significant as Edison. It was all about Edison until, I think, in the last 10 years with internet and stuff and the oatmeal and people just kind of being like, you know, Edison was kind of a dick. You know, Tesla was kind of a shy, you know, autistic genius, or not autistic, but, you know, he's a weirdo.
But he was liked, though. Like, he died, I think he lived to be like 94.
He died poor, though, right?
Yeah, but he lived in, and when I was in New York, I wanted to go look at it last time, didn't have time, but the hotel where he died, I don't think he necessarily died in the hotel, but they let him stay there for like 2 years, rent-free, because they understood, like, hey, he's just the best, and he's so smart, and it sucks that they stole all of his patents. So they just let him stay there, like, you're cool, dude.
Oh, see, now that's a life, that's like not where I'd like to be, but I'd be happy to be that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that level of, like, okay, you've got nothing, but you have enough respect of the... just the way the world runs and the people that, you know, control the small decisions, that you can survive. Like, you can go to any fast food place and be like, all right, yeah, here you go. I know who you are.
And that he did die poor, and that, like, Van Gogh didn't sell many, I think, one painting in
Mozart
his life.
Mozart died poor.
Yeah.
So Mozart, of all people, Jesus.
I think that, you know, so many people now get so good. My dad is... an artist, but he does, you know, he does a physical job where he just makes things, and yet...
What's he do?
Makes fences, those fences, and he's just really, really, like, meticulous about it. They're all, like, the joints are always perfect, they're always level, everything's always on a perfect line. He doesn't
Saying he's an artist and that, like, he takes that craft seriously, whereas some people are like, just Ron's fences, fuck you, and he's like... No, these are legitimate.
But there's no pretension with that, because if you told him, he's like, no, I'm not. I make fences. But like, no, but the way you do it. I mean, there are people who enter into art, and then because of their background or their training, they get real good at handing out business cards and racing around and shaking the right hands, and they get ahead. They succeed, and then you go, but your product's horseshit. Like, that's terrible. And then, but we all go, well, it's subjective. Like, no, that's terrible. It's objectively bad, and we're all just turning a blind eye to it because some part of it resonates with us, but really, it's just been marketed well. And so I think that so often, like if you enter into any of the arts, you are making an agreement that it might not work out and you might not be compensated. And if you're willing to say like that you'll do art for no money, it might hold you to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up at a place where like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's been part of my journey is that I've learned that, oh no, you do need to like build up your business chops. And that doesn't mean bad business. It means good business, but you need to take care of business. And it's not about just make the art and put it out there. And you have to be a good salesman and not a sleazy used car salesman, but put yourself in situations where you can succeed. Like try to show your stuff to people. Like, what do you think of this? Like, like, can I sell it in your store? It costs you nothing. You get paid if you sell any of them. I will build a display for you to look at it. And people like respond to that rather than, you know, no one came over to my house and wanted to pick up my art. And how come I can't find a partner? Like, I used to have this mentality, and I think a lot of people still do, but like the mentality that you're this princess and like a knight in shining armor businessman will come pick you, and then like they'll take care of the business side. No one wants to take care of that. Everyone wants to do the creative side. So you have to also do the business end. Not all of it. You do need some help from people, but
sure. It made me feel good when I went to Meltdown and your comics are there in the little display, which is like, oh, this is fantastic. This is great. Even if you had been bugging them for weeks, like that's still a romantic story to me.
Yeah.
Even if you had been there like, oh, old Gil's got to get his pamphlet up there.
That one actually goes counter to my point because they actually offered that to me. Like I didn't have to chase them for
there
that.
There was so a
that
prince.
That goes after. But but the first time I went in there wasn't, they didn't approach me. I went in there with my backpack full of stuff and had to ask like, who do I talk to about this? And they're like, oh, you talk to Holly. She's here on Wednesday. So it's like, okay, well, this Monday was for nothing other than to learn that person's name. So I will be back on Wednesday, sir, and then come back. And then project that throughout a year. And then that ends up with the display at the end if you like.
Yeah, because it started off where it was certainly not like a big... You didn't have a lot of real estate.
No, I just had like the book, like one book there and on like new shelf, and then like another one. And then once I had three books out, that's when they approached me about the display case. And then,
well, that's the best too, because it's a bit of a both. Like you know, like you were saying, like getting a partner. There are people who are single and not happy about it, who not only maybe not going out, but they're not even like trying in any capacity. They get invited to parties and they don't talk to anyone, or they don't go to those parties, or they're just sitting there wondering like, God, how am I gonna meet someone? Like, you gotta try. You do have to like put yourself out there.
That's the flaw in a lot of the dating apps. It might work out for some. Did you ever, like, how long have you been you've been in a serious relationship for 5 years now?
Four. But
did you ever use any of that stuff when you were single?
Didn't really want to be in a relationship.
Yeah,
I just
neither.
Felt like in my life, there's nothing I want to... I don't have a vision board, necessarily. I just want to, like, do things I like, and if something accentuates my life, then I'd love to add that.
It feels like you wouldn't need a vision board because, like, you probably have so much going on internally, like, just sitting here in your shack. We're recording in the Huntsberger. I don't know if you have, like, a name, like, utility... muffin kitchen or anything, but just there's like stuff going on. I'm not going to reveal any of it, but it shows that he's got iron. What is it? Irons in the fire. Like there's things that there's Huntsberger's body of work that the world sees, and then there's the stuff being developed. Some of it might not see the light of day. Some of it might be the best stuff you've ever done. But it's like it's being grown in the shack, and so like you're living in it. You don't need to be like, oh yeah, my projects, like on a little board, like rest of your life. You're living in the vision board.
Kind of. I mean, I'll sometimes put like the names of things I'd like, because I have too many things I'd like to do, and then I get a little overwhelmed. So I'll figure out like five things I want to work on, and then I'll write those down somewhere. And so that's a kind of a vision. But I mean, I don't have like a picture of a car and a house and a wife and a lot of
peripheral stuff. You're focused on the work, like not focused on, oh, I need to be on this television show. It's like, what are you going to say on it? Doesn't matter. I just want to be exposed. I want people to love.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Once you like think about, if you're playing that, exposure is good, but if you're solely in the exposure game, like you're never going to beat an 18-year-old, you know, 100-pound blonde girl at Malibu Beach. Like, they're they're just winning. Or a hot dude, like, the young, like, or a kitten, even, or babies. Like, those are going to win the, yeah, the just sheer exposure game. So you need to have the substance.
Yeah, no talent, speaking strictly to Instagram, like, no talent really outnumbers cleavage. Mm-mm. Like, that the most followers are just,
or the thigh gap with just one pixel with the sun shining through it.
But to go back to your, I feel like it's a success story, or it's a success moment, in that you did the thing that probably you'd put off for a while. Like, I want a prince to come in and say, hey, I saw your stuff online, let's send it worldwide, and you can even do a gallery show, and we'll go to Tokyo, and you'll have this dream life. And then years go by, and you're like, that doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. You meet someone every now and again that goes, yeah, it's the strangest thing. They saw blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, that happens to one person ever. But if you have to put yourself out there, you walk into Meltdown and say, essentially what you're saying is, like, if I had this here, would it catch anyone's attention? And so then when it does, and they say, hey, it's selling so well, put a few more up here, that has to feel like, oh, it's just simple. It's a simple game. Like, if you make something good and give people a place to find it, they'll come get it.
Yeah, the slow path, though. But we romanticize the quick path, because then once I have the money, then I can, like, relax and then actually focus on the work, rather than, like, oh, crap, like, is taxes this and these, yeah, things, like, kind of bother us. But I think it has to be that way. Like, unfortunately, like, you need that pressure. Like, otherwise, I think if you look at people that do hit it big, oftentimes the work tends to suffer when you're worried about, like, yeah, what size pool you're going to build and the... In the, yeah, backyard of one of your houses.
Well, all those factors get it. I don't even think you can put those in your mind about, like, will it weaken me? Oh, God, what if I stop drinking? Or what if I make a bunch of money? Or what if I have a family? Whatever those things be. If you like doing what you're doing, there are some people that are either... And you wouldn't want to trade that to be like, well, they're kind of mentally ill. Like, all they want to do is paint all the time, nonstop, nothing else. And they're great at it. Cool, but you have no other hobbies, you have no other interests or joys, you don't really have friends, you're always, always only painting. I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I think you can't really
sounds
think
like
about
escapism when, mm-hmm, it's just nothing but that. But I don't know, I don't see the paintings of the hypothetical person. Like,
yeah,
they could,
true,
be mind-blowing, but what I'm imagining is, I don't know much about the painting world, and it seems like if you're still playing in real life painting, I think you're behind the people working in digital, because they're, as far as, like, the end product of what they're making, like, concept art for Blizzard and these vast, like, giant fantasy landscapes, that they are better than stuff Michelangelo did. Not for the time, like, that was a bigger, back then, they'd made bigger increments maybe, but the end product, like, it's way better than old fresco paintings or, like, oiled stuff. Like, they just don't pop as much, there's not as much depth or, like, cool.
I'll bet if you stand there and see those, you'd have a different...
The old ones?
Just any painting that is, like, revered or world, you know, like, if you go to LACMA or places.
But I was 15 and it's different. But I'm trying to, like, what am I trying to say? It's that the art is always evolving, and now is the best moment to see art because there's more than ever, and the old stuff is still there, and the new stuff is building upon the old stuff.
I don't know, man. Because it changes. Like, imagine being in Greece and watching them build giant structures that were art, and that to be here now and go, like, well, this digital stuff is cool that's being shown in this horrible strip mall with these tiny, tiny, gross walls. I think I'd rather see it, like, where they cared about every column, where they chiseled and carved every tiny little pocket of it. I mean, that, to me, like, when you have a lot of time and you don't have traffic and shit like that, you're just a bunch of people living in a city, like, let's do something to keep our hands busy.
I think the art, assuming it wasn't, I don't know what the Greek situation was, but assuming it wasn't just slaves forced to build all of it.
Yeah, I need to have an expert on here about ancient Greece, but I don't feel like it was
we do lose
slaves.
A little of it. That's like a big, I don't buy into any of these fears, but it's always like a fear of one fear I have of the future as we get deeper into VR, and some people are like, well, it'll never be the same because you, like, it'll just be your eyes and ears. Like, I'm saying, like, once they get smell and touch and all that, like, so fully immersive VR, let's say 30, 40 years down the road, is that going to have that Star Trek The Next Generation effect of, you know how they'd order stuff from the replicator and Counselor Troy would be like, no, real chocolate. And it's like, this is real chocolate. And it's like, yeah, but it's a little bit off. Like, and I know because I've had the real thing, and like as advanced as the computers get, like the algorithm just never gets like the depth of that. And that's like a thing of like, oh, can we just never master the raw archaic revival experience? Like, can we ever replicate it, or are we just gonna always get more stuff and just leave behind a little piece of our soul with each technological climb? Which, that's a little bit pessimistic view on it. Like, who knows, they might solve it tomorrow, but that's just a fear.
I think everything gets left in the dust, where there are like these, you know, technicians who have specific, I can fix any typewriter. Or you go to a fair and there's someone who's dedicated their entire life to like mud dwellings or braiding certain types of like weeds or horsehair. You're like, you're good. You're really good at making that stuff or braiding it or whatever. But at the time when this is popular, it'd be like the whole village knew how to do that. Or if nothing else, five other people. So you could share and combine, and maybe the soil had a different composition then. I mean, I don't think we can ever get it exactly how it used to be. But I guess, yeah, maybe nothing ever really truly gets lost.
Yeah.
Who knows? Dude, I want to get into, I'm like, dude, I want
to get it to BSDM or BDS.
I want to get into some I want to go talk more about your, what we started to get into, philosophical things. No, death dungeon. And where's Prince, and how are you liking this Gulliger from June Lake Brewing?
At first, I thought it was lacking a little bit of the punch, but it had the aroma, like the hoppiness of like, oh, this is gonna like pack a heavy punch. And then you try it, and it's got like a bit of a lighter like thing. But I kind of like it. It's like a nice light, like summer beer for a hot day. So like, I'm half done with it right now, and I'm much more into it halfway than the first. But the first sip, I wasn't disappointing. It was more like, okay, I thought it was going to be like a big 40-piece orchestra, but it's a guy with an acoustic guitar singing his heart out. It's pretty good.
I think that's a really good analogy. And it could be Gallagher, because it is handwritten on the people will have to go to thespacecave.com to see the June Lake Brewing labels. They are unlike any I've ever seen in beer. But this one's only 4% alcohol, so you can
drink
it all
day. Is it June Lake every week, or you do a different brewing?
Different brewing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So the last June Lake Brewing, these are courtesy of my aunt, Jane, was the Silver Lake Saison. And then this one, I think, is Gulliger, but it might be Gallagher, and the A got rubbed off
get
a little.
Get both. If you go to the JLB, get both.
All right, well, we'll pick this up shortly with I want to get into your philosophical leanings and
are we going to intermission, or are we just going right into
it? Oh, we're taking an intermission.
All
buddy.
Right.
Part two coming up next week. We'll get more into the philosophical side of things, and he's got some great books about the afterlife, and it's like a lot of similar sort of sensibilities in the material and the sort of subject matter that we draw comics about. And he's stayed more active with it than I have. I haven't really done that in a while, but I might get back into it. We will see. Anyway, more with Ramin next week. No one to mention as far as a donor this week for donating money for beer, but James W., our one recurring monthly donation. So I want to say thanks to James. Anytime we don't have a unique donor necessarily, rolls back over to James. So the beer this week was more than likely provided by him. Thank you, James W. And that's about it. You can rate the show on iTunes or subscribe or do any of that, or feel free to not do any of that crap. But if you'd like to, you can find all the stuff at iTunes. I've got a bunch of albums on iTunes. You can listen to a bunch of stand-up that I've done over the years. Okay, that's about it. Let's get out of here. This is some music that I just found the other day, like under the seat in my car, and I don't know where it came from. I'm assuming one of my trips through Portland, this was given to me, and I apologize to Liz if we had a long, meaningful conversation, and then for some reason I missed it. I don't feel like that's the case, but I couldn't put my finger on just exactly where I got this music and or when. This is from 2014, though, and I hadn't listened to it, and then I finally did, and I thought it was great. She's a really talented musician. She has an album out called To and Fro, and this is a song from that, from Liz DeLise. I hope I'm saying that correctly. This is called Strangers. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.
for the dad I never had. Married in the desert, lost to Burning Man. 3 months of higher education, then the Rainbow Family came. Traded my books for a backpack, skipped down and changed my name. Never felt I quite fit anywhere, it seemed, until this family of strangers accompanied. Portland always calls. These strangers are strangers with faces I know. A family of strangers with every town it grows. And these cities are perfect, man's most valiant try. Why else would we come back to smoggy streets and skies? Wary-eyed and weak. Can there be no breaching these walls that make us weak? So I play on a quiet melody. If they'd only stop time, perhaps they'd finally see that no matter how many times I leave, Portland always calls. These strangers are strangers with faces I know. A family of strangers with every town it grows. And these cities are perfect, man's most valiant try. Why else would we come back to smoggy streets and with faces I know.